Well, cool. Let's get started. Episode 7 of Project Connect. Thank you for being here today. I'll do a quick intro. Sage Breslin, who's a psychologist, mm-hmm. PhD, with Sage Wisdom Institute as well. And I'll let you get into what that is and what it does and why it's important. Po Lang, who's a nurse, but also is the owner of the Olive Wellness. So, and I'll let you explain that as well. So, today we're here just to talk about wellness in general, spiritual wellness, physical wellness, nutrition, how those things kind of impact our daily lives. A lot of people work every day. Some people are active. Some people are sitting around. Who knows who will hear this or see this? It could be someone young, someone old, someone with kids. So we can kind of let this thing go wherever it goes. But the overall gist of Project Connect and our ethos is that if we affect one life and somebody's life is changed in a positive way from the info that's shared across this medium, then we win. So appreciate you being here. I guess I'll start with you, Po, because we were kind of talking about it before we got rocking and rolling here. But so you're probably going to repeat some of the things that you already told me. But, tell me, what got you into this, why the passion towards your company and, the topic of nursing and helping other people and, kind of give me your background a little bit.
Sounds good. So I'm Po Lang. I'm a registered nurse by trade, and I'm also the founder and owner of Olive Wellness. So I started my career in nursing because I wanted to help people, and it goes back to being a child and being raised in a Chinese family, knowing all a traditional Chinese medicine, using alternative herbs and teas. I actually, in junior high school, around the age of 12, I had a mass on my neck, and my mom took me to every single doctor that we can find in New York, saying, "What is this? Is it cancer?" Some of them were like, "Maybe." Some people were like, "Oh, maybe not." And some of them were like, "Oh, we need to do surgery. We need to take it out. It's too big." And some people were like, "Oh, maybe we need to just do a biopsy because she's so young." And they were all very invasive procedures and surgeries for a 12-year-old child who had no medical history whatsoever. And being in a Chinese family, they were like, "You know what? Let's take her to the apothecary in Chinatown where we know the owners and we get all our herbs from them and see what they think." And they saw me, and it was an issue of inflammation. So I had, in Chinese, we have yin and yang. We have cold and hot. We have a balance in our body. And when it's out of balance, that's when stuff such as inflammation, tumors start growing, and masses start growing. So they prescribed me this tea. It was very, very dark blend tea. It was a huge pot. I had to drink it every single day for 30 days. And after a month, that mass that I had on my neck was gone. And it was like a miracle. And as a 12-year-old, I had no context of why did that happen? How did this work? This is like a miracle thing. I didn't even think it was a miracle thing. I just thought, okay, my mom found a treatment and I'm better. And it was only until I went to nursing school, I was learning all the Western medicine and all the alternative therapies or complementary therapies we now call them were just on hindsight. And everyone was like, "Oh, that's just, rumors, it doesn't work," but it's centuries of studies and dynasties that goes back in history versus Western medicine is just, the past tens of years. So I continued and I'm a nurse now, but I always incorporated what my background is to my patients. And it's just so important to be able to do that. But it's also sad because in our current healthcare state in our country and how the system is, it's so segmented and I'm only allowed to follow them up a month after. And after that, insurance doesn't cover it. They need to find a different practice. They need a referral from their primary care doctor. These people are sick. They can't just travel wherever their primary care doctor is very easily or see a specialist. Or if they do see a specialist, they're saying, "Okay, your copay is now $500 because this is not covered by your insurance." And they can't afford it and they need it. And that is what inspired me to pursue my own company, basically to give the advice and counseling and coaching that people need outside of being in a surgical setting or a hospital setting, and to help them get better and also prevent them from getting any illnesses and diseases in the future. So that's what Olive Wellness is all about. And it's a personalized approach. What works for me is not going to work for you or my husband or my sister. So it's just really seeing someone for who they are and seeing what they need and then helping them get actionable habits daily to get to where they want to be.
So very that's cool. That's a pretty amazing story. And when you tell it, it's amazing to me that obviously there's results that come from alternative medicine and the science is there and it's been proven time and time again. Like, not that Western medicine's bad, mm-hmm. but that, you know, different illnesses or problems or issues that people need solved may not always fit in that box.
Yeah.
So you have all these stories that come up time and time again, and yet I don't know, there's just a level of kind of arrogance and ignorance involved in not opening up to those things and kind of being open to that, you know, and how it could affect you and help you with whatever you have. So it's very cool that you started a company that makes that available to people and gives them, you know, an alternative.
Yeah, just to make it accessible to people so that they know there's a different way as well.
Yeah. So Sage, why don't you share your story and what kind of got you to where you are and your company, and let us know a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah. We're going to have to order in lunch and dinner, and maybe some sleeping pads. You know, very much like you, I have a complicated medical history. I'm one of those crazy people who I've actually crossed over 8 times in this body, and for a variety of just reactions that my body had to medicines and Western medicines, and so it's made me hypersensitive to everything. It's certainly deepened my intuition, but it's made it difficult for me to use straight up Western medicine because mostly things are too invasive, mm-hmm. they're too strong, or they just don't work. Yeah. You know, other people can take a pain medicine and my brain looks at pain medicine and mm-hmm. freaks out and stops my heart. And the doctors will say, well, that's not right. And I'll say, well, yeah, last month in the hospital here, that's what happened. So, you know, I love the intuitive nature of how your parents simply trusted their gut to go with what they knew to be true. I love that they were open to Western medicine having an opinion, but at the end of the day, you know, they followed their heart and their history mm-hmm. to something that they knew was at least worth a try. So for me, I have a family full of doctors and was raised with Western medicine, and when it started to fail me is when I really turned towards other kinds of alternatives. I'm an integrative medical specialist, so I went back to Harvard Med to actually get a certificate in mind-body medicine after all the other, you know, alphabet soup after my name, because I wanted the, not so much the education, because I'd been picking it up along mm-hmm. the way and learning lots of things, but I wanted the validation that I could go down a road to offer my patients things that, A, worked for me, B, were standard in some model, you know, maybe the Chinese medical model, or mm-hmm. in an integrative model, maybe not necessarily in the Western medicine model. And it's been a really interesting journey. So my company is a counseling and coaching practice, but it also has arms to look at spiritual development and intuition and education and training and communication and leadership building. And so we really try to look at how do we develop the best version of each person who comes in the door, and much like your company, try to individualize things so that people can really become healthier in every single way. I'm a firm believer that if you don't have a spiritual connection, you're probably not going to develop that like perfect holistic, because something will be missing, but I'm not religious. I was raised in a religious household, and I am deeply spiritual now, but leave that more organized religion to the side.
Sure. Do you find that your patients, when you work with them, kind of along the same line of Western versus Eastern and the openness to that and, you know, acceptance of it, I think we're getting there. Is there a pushback? Are some people, almost because of their upbringing or just society in general, like when you talk about holistic approaches and spirituality and things like that, Because again, going back to the science, right? Because for me, in the absence of, you know, if you have differing opinions, then you go to the facts and you go to the science, right? Mm-hmm. And there's tons of studies out there that show, you know, the power of the mind, you know, and the connection with the body and, you know, the placebo effect and all those types of things. So even though that's there, there's still this kind of, you know, for lack of a scientific word, like this foo-foo kind of like, whoa, mm-hmm. wait, holistic, spiritual, and things like that. So do you get a pushback from people or?
Well, maybe I used to. I would say up until 10 years ago, okay. I had probably a more traditional looking practice. And so I would get a wide variety of people coming in. I still was on insurance panels. So I would get this sort of not pre-selected population, and they would come in and I would kind of have to test drive. And it was before I started wearing a bindi, and there were a lot of things kind of not known about me. I wasn't very public about my experiences. You know, my bio was sort of like short and sweet, and you know, this is what, oh, I'm Dr. Traditional, you know, and then I had my own awakening to how inhibiting that was for me as a clinician.
Right.
And I took the leap, and I took that leap of faith that if I could just be myself, like really fully myself, and totally embrace my skills and talents and what I had to offer people, that you know, the population that really wanted that would walk through my doors, and they did. Right. I had 1 year where I had one client come through the doors who was sort of like, oh my God, and she left. I mean, she had one session, she went away. Since that time, I have not had a single person walk through my doors who wasn't searching for that, who wasn't searching for me.
Right.
And I don't mean that in as a very like vain special
sure,
way.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. They were looking for that, hungry for that, like,
right.
Let me dive deeper into how I can achieve a much more comprehensive wellness by being myself.
Right.
And sort of giving a flip and tossing aside everybody else's opinion of how it's supposed to be. So yeah. It's actually been really nice just to be who I am in my practice and invite people who, you know, can value that as a skill
right.
or offering rather than fighting to, you know, break through other people's ideas about how they should be.
Right.
Although sometimes that, you know, we still have to kind of dismantle
it's
those
work
things.
In progress.
Well, and if you think about it, besides the results and the outcomes, right? Because clearly it sounds like since you switched that, you're seeing better results, you know, better outcomes from your patients. But like, just in general for your own well-being, right? Like,
yeah.
Like right, the ability to be yourself and do what you want to do and connect with people in a way that's authentic to you. I mean, it's like, who wants to do anything else, right?
Right. I mean, it would be a little bit like trying to perform surgery while wearing a full face mask,
right.
You know, where you can't see anything and you can't really breathe and you can't relax into your rhythm. You
right.
know, once you're able to take that off, then you can really sink into your intuition and into, again, rhythm is the word that comes up for me, that you can just sink into that rhythm and go with it.
Right. You probably attract a lot of people that are open and willing and ready for alternatives just by the basis of them reaching out to you or coming to you. They've probably come to a point where they're ready to seek something outside of, yeah.
And I aim to help them navigate. I mean, I do love Western medicine. I studied it for so many years. I still practice it to a certain point. And I do think Western medicine is good in that for acute illnesses, like if you have a broken arm, like I'm not going to be able to make you elixir and magically make your arm
right.
bend together in 1 hour, right? It's all about preventing chronic diseases and autoimmune diseases is what I really specialize in. So I do like that Western medicine can fix a child's broken arm if they were playing. But there is a gap, right? It's not just we need to banish Western medicine. We need to kind of learn to work together with Western medicine. And
right.
Big Pharma is so strong, and now there's a huge crackdown on these Big Pharma companies. And I used to see them come into the operating room and give us lunches and take us out. And I'm like, this is kind of weird. Like, why are we supposed to be friends?
Right.
Like, you know, it's kind of a weird, like, force, you know, experience. And some people enjoy that. And now they're cracking down. And I'm glad, because you need to be transparent. You are transparent and true to yourself. And I think that's when you meet clients and they're people. And when you are transparent and authentic, they feel that, and they feel that you care for them.
Right.
It's so hard. Like, I go to the doctor, and I've gone to so many physicians and providers and nurse practitioners and PAs. And if I don't have that connection with them, I don't go back, because, you know, they see me for, I waited like 2 hours for a specialist once. I got in and they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm so busy today. And it's like, well, I was busy as well, but okay. I waited, and she saw me for 10 minutes, and then she didn't give me any advice that I didn't know already.
Right.
And then shooed me out the door, and then I get an insurance bill.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, I really wanted someone who was a specialist in the field, and I got 10 minutes of time. And that's why I feel like when I do initial consultations, they are 45 minutes to 2 hours sometimes, because I really want to get to know them and see who they are for a person, not just like, okay, you don't have a headache, that's like the worst headache of your life, so maybe you don't have meningitis, you don't have chest pain, okay, we can send you home with some muscle relaxant. As it becomes like a protocol, you see a patient, they have XYZ, okay, here's a prescription for this, off you go, you're
right.
Home. But say with your pain medicine, your body did not react well. And then the next time you go to another facility, they can't believe or fathom that, wow, that happened to you.
Okay.
Like, yes, everyone's different. And we
right.
need to respect it and just be honest that, you know, some things work, some things don't, but it's a working progress and it's not perfection. And just really work on it together, basically. I always tell my clients, like, I'm your teammate, I'm your advocate, I want the best for you as well. It's not
right.
just like, you know, my best, because what you do to your body and what you put in it, what you practice every day, your spirituality, it's all gonna affect you in the long run. It's not gonna affect me. It's not
right.
gonna help my body, what
right.
you do. So I'm here to help you and kind of guide you on steps to being successful in your everyday life. And that's
yeah.
how it really starts.
Well, and I mean, beyond the fact that that's just treating people with courtesy and being a human being,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
But like, I was listening to a TED talk the other day, and they talked about a Harvard study where they ran this study of, I don't know how many patients, like 100 or something like that, but they had them come out of surgery, and they would give them morphine or whatever, give them a pain med, and half of them, they had the machine just pump it, and half of them got it administered by an actual physician. And the experience in terms of pain relief, you know, was so much higher in ones where they were connected to an actual
mm-hmm.
person. So they're getting the same dosage and mm-hmm. everything. And so that expanded in all kinds of other studies to like study connectedness and how that affects us and things like that, and the power of the mind and the body
mm-hmm.
and things like that. But again, it's not just, hey, that's the right thing to do, but it's actually more efficient, more effective. You know, and it's proven that that's a real thing, right? And I think we're kind of just now turning the page on all that. And we kind of got into this groove of prescribing, you know,
mm-hmm.
prescriptions and medicine to people like that, just for everything, like you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm curious with your practice, how many people, and this might be kind of a, I don't know, an ignorant statement on my part or a question, but how many people come to you who are like, you know, terminally ill? Do you get patients like that?
I don't get a lot of terminally ill patients, because at that point, they're like referred to palliative care. And
right.
that is an offshoot. And they have specialists who do palliative care,
okay.
which I wouldn't get the referral, or most likely
right.
they wouldn't see my visibility, because I'm
right.
more to prevent things.
Got
but
it.
The times I do get those is always like my family member is sick, what should I do? Kind of those referrals. What
yeah.
can I add to their regimen now that they're doing? Because palliative care is just comfort care. And I just suggest
yeah.
like things that they can do for them, like music therapy, meditation, how to relieve their stress, how they're going
right.
to pass from their body, how kind of anxiety that they're going to have, and kind of preparing them for what's going to happen next.
Right.
But I definitely leave it to the palliative specialist, and I just give them extra things that they can do to make them more comfortable.
Yeah,
because in that case,
where I was coming from that is like, you know, if someone were to be diagnosed with like stage 4 cancer or something like that, and then the physician say, hey, you've got, X amount of time, but they're not, you know, ready for hospice or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I could see people saying, well, you're telling me that, you know, there's no chance or no hope. So it's like, you know, I'm willing to consider anything. And if they're, you know.
Yeah, there are other, I don't personally do it, but there are other ways I've seen. There was this veteran in the U.S. He was a Greek background. He was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. He wasn't my patient. He was just in this study. And they told him, you're going to die in probably like 2 months, 6 months. We don't really know. And he said, well, I don't want to die here in the States. So he went back to Greece. Then he bought a plot of land in Athens. And he just lived, you know, the Mediterranean lifestyle, eating, being close to family that he's not seen for so many years, having friends, being in the sun, working on his yard that he had, gardening, and he lived. And, you know, 1 year passes by and he's like, I'm still alive. 2 years passes by, I'm still alive and I'm happier than ever. 25 years pass by and he's like, something's wrong. Like, I have lung cancer, why am I still alive? He comes back to the States. And he tries to get in touch with all the doctors that he saw, and they're all dead. And this is just a single case study scenario,
but
he changed his lifestyle, didn't live in this stressful environment anymore, changed his diet, his lifestyle, his friendships, his social, his environmental, being in the ground, being in the soil, getting that microbiome into him, breathing fresher air in a nice natural environment, and he lived. And you know, some people are like, oh, maybe he was misdiagnosed or all this stuff. But okay, like he had all these scans and people confirmed it and thought he was terminal and he lived. And that's a single case scenario. But there are things that can happen. There are people who get diagnosed with like stage 2 breast cancer and they can go on certain diets to kind of reduce that inflammation. Right. And there's also now like new immunotherapy where you can teach your own cells in Western medicine to fight against the cancer cells that are masking as you, which is really cool. So there are different things. There are some people who will turn to just nutrition as an adjunct onto their medicinal therapy, which might be helpful. So there is always hope, depending on where they are and if they're open to try it.
How much does nutrition come into what you guys do when you're treating patients? And is it, I mean, I would imagine it's a big part of what you do with your patients.
Yeah, a huge
part, I think.
Yeah.
And it depends on what they come in for, but I mean, anything from just things like leaky gut, you know, general you know, poor quality of life in terms of physical health, all the way down to things like depression and anxiety. What you eat makes a difference.
Right.
So if you can get a, you know, good foundational nutrition that is actually providing nutrients to your body, you know, not just putting in calories, but actually calories that count, you know, that's sort of the baseline. And then you're wanting to look at the nutrition that will support specific things. Like, you know, if you are struggling with cancer, removing all your sugar, you know, alcohol, anything that is hard for the body to work on, to digest. You know, you go down to a diet where it's easy for your body to process it and make use of it, and then it has more energy to actually fight what it needs to fight, if there's something to fight. Or, you know, other kinds of things, like for somebody who has what we refer to as an endogenous depression that is sort of genetically linked, everybody in the family is at it, it keeps on traveling down, you know, you take a medication, it gets a little better, you go off the medication, it comes back. That, you know, just going to a diet which is higher in the leafy greens, you know, a little bit more B6 to support more energy. There are things like that. With anxiety, you want to kind of take out anything that's toxic, anything that...
Would it be fair to say that, like, processed foods and, I mean,
yeah,
for just about any, ailment,
do that.
Right?
Don't do
like,
that.
Probably, like,
no.
The stuff like alcohol, sugars, processed foods, like, I would imagine across the board, there's probably not many conditions where it would be bad advice to say, you know, more plant-based, you know, less processed, so whole foods,
Yes, definitely. I mean, definitely no processed foods. Right. And it's
like
so
Doritos
hard.
Are probably yes. not on your suggested.
Not my suggested list of foods. And what I try to do is suggest foods for people to add to their life, not take away. So I never say like, don't eat Doritos ever again, because if someone loves Doritos, that's very sad. And they're gonna get sad right. that they can't have Doritos. They're gonna feel guilty if they sneak a Dorito here or there. And I don't want that, because that's gonna increase their stress level. That's gonna increase their cortisol, which is their stress hormone. That's gonna cause more stress. And it's linked to having belly fat in people if you mm-hmm. have increased cortisol. And also they found in a recent study in the University of Maryland Medical Center, they found that people with PTSD had increased cortisol levels, and they had an 8% shrinkage of their hippocampus in their brain, which is their memory center. And they were getting brain fog, depression, anxiety, confusion, trouble learning. And this can all be fixed with what you're putting into your body.
Wow.
As well. So loads of this goes back to your mental state as well. If you're not eating right, you're not going to feel right. If you eat a high sugar, high carb breakfast, you're going to be putting your body through this. Like, I had a coworker tell me he ate a donut. And he had a whole cup of that big jumbo monster can. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I feel like very hyped right now. I feel good. I'm going to be ready for surgery. I was like, you're jittering. What happened? And he told me. And I was like, okay, that's not good. I think we need to work on what you're going to eat for breakfast next time. He's like, oh, I actually had breakfast as well. And then I had that. But when you eat things that aren't like nutrient dense, your body's going to keep wanting to eat. Because it's selling your hunger hormones, ghrelin and leptin, they're gonna tell you, hey, you didn't feed me enough fat, you didn't feed me protein, you didn't feed me things that's gonna stretch out my stomach to make me digest today. I'm still hungry. And now my sugar level is like here, where I'm like super hyper, super aware, and then I'm gonna crash because all the insulin is gonna come out and say, no, 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 the sugar needs to go away. And you're gonna feel really down. And you're gonna wonder why, and you're gonna try to reach for another sugary sweet, like a Milky Bar or Galaxy or something right. like that, a Twix bar, and say, oh, I feel good again. So it becomes this addiction.
Right.
And it's hard because people feel immediately better because of that high sugar intake and a dopamine release, because they're like, oh, this is rewarding myself. I feel good again. But then they dip again. So it's really about teaching people to eat green leafy vegetables, cruciferous vegetables that give you phytochemicals. So when phytochemicals go in your cells, they kind of say, hey, make those anti-cancer chemicals and enzymes out. Make those anti-inflammatory enzymes and go around the body and get away all this bad stuff, please. And when you eat processed food, you get empty calories, basically. And they're not helping you. They're just making you go on this high and low roller coaster throughout the day, and then
right.
it really affects your brain. And it's like, you know, some people come to me and they always feel guilty because they feel, oh, I ate a snack again, like, and they're beating themselves down. I'm like, no, don't beat yourselves up. Like, it's okay. I have a Twix bar now and then. I have some Doritos now and then. It's not every meal, it's not every day, but sometimes I can enjoy it. It's about what you're gonna eat on your next meal to make your body feel nourished again, mm-hmm. so that you don't feel that brain fog. And it's hard because people feel brain fog, and then they start getting all these other symptoms, and their hormones are imbalanced, and get a thyroid issue, and they have low energy consistently, and they're wondering why. And then it can lead to depression, but it's really just an imbalance starting with food.
Right.
So it's quite hard, yeah.
So when you're treating someone with depression or anxiety or those things, what if someone was out there listening or watching this right now, what would, from a nutrition standpoint, what would be steps that you'd advise them to take, or just wellness in general for someone
yeah.
who's suffering from that? Because I think a lot of people do. And to kind of step backwards, where this kind of the genesis of even this podcast was, you know, one of our employees here took his own life 3 years ago. And so we made kind of a commitment towards mental health and suicide prevention and stuff. So like, I'm always interested in how these talks tie to that. So if someone's out there and they're struggling and they're feeling depressed and probably embarrassed about it, probably not talking to anybody about it, but from a diet and overall wellness, like, I know mm-hmm. it's probably a way bigger topic and advice to give in, you know, a soundbite, but what would you say to someone like that?
Well, I have two things. I'll answer your question, and then I'll offer a short personal story that speaks to that. I smiled as you were talking about it, because it's one of my sort of pet areas, is people who come in and they're saying they're depressed or they're anxious, there are so many other things that can actually mock it. And mm-hmm. and hypothyroidism is one of those things. Mm-hmm. So I think because I started in the Western medicine side and was surrounded by doctors, I tend to do things like say, hey, let's talk to your primary care. And what I'd like to see is I want to make sure that your thyroid is functioning properly, because I don't want to encourage you to be treated for depression, which may actually just be low thyroid function. I want to look at cortisol levels. I want to know what's going on with them. But I also, yeah, want to start with, let's look at your diet. Let's look at your sleep cycle, which is the part of the personal story, and exercise. And exercise can just be walking around the block. I've had clients who wanted to quit smoking, and I asked them, why do you smoke? And where do you smoke? And a lot of folks would talk to me about their jobs, and they'd get a smoke break, right? So they'd have to go outside of the building, and they'd play on their phone, or they would just sit quietly and take a break from cubicle life,
right?
Nonstop exposure and noise and interaction, and they'd go sit out in a quiet place or stand or walk outside, getting what would be fresh air if they weren't smoking. And I just encouraged them to try once an hour rather than taking a smoke break, to actually just go outside and walk around their building or walk around the block, and then come back in and see how much they continue to desire the cigarettes. And that alone starts to reduce the use of the cigarette, because really what they want is a break from all of that exposure and noise. So, you know, the lifestyle assessment actually becomes really important, looking at how much sleep is somebody getting, what's the quality of their sleep. Now we have Fitbits and Apple Watches that are going to give you all of that data. It's crazy.
It is. Like, it is.
Crazy good, you know. And people are starting to look at things like apnea and, you know, or even just sleeping positions, the pillows they use, whether or not they're allergic to dust mites. I mean, these things can absolutely have an impact on how well they sleep and how restorative the sleep is. So we look at sleep, we look at, you know, what does the job look like? Do they have sort of enough insulation for the kind of human they are? What is their diet? And if they're into processed foods, we just say, like, you know, right, everything in moderation. So can we stop that a little bit more? And then looking at how much can we feed into a plant-based diet, or at least what we call happy cow syndrome, right? Trying to choose, if you're going to eat, you know, meat and poultry and even fish, you know, choose those items that come from somebody who's taking loving care, not shoving it in a box and, you know, turning off the light. And there are beautiful, wonderful farms all over the place. And okay, they're still slaughtering cows. That's okay. Like, that is part of what's happening in our world. We still eat meat. Right. I don't, because I can't deal with it. But that doesn't have to be a bad thing if that cow has been treated well and had a good life and gotten to do what cows do.
Right.
So it makes a difference in how much cortisol that cow had in its system that went into the tissue that you put in your mouth that affects your body. Like, it may be a crazy stretch, but that's real.
Right.
Just asking somebody to say, okay, I know you buy your Ralph's eggs, and it could be Vaughn's or Albertson's or whatever, right? Like, okay, and these are these eggs. Now, I got these eggs from the local farm. And, you know, this farmer loves his chickens, you know, and he's named them all, and that's a stretch, but he's done it, and he talks to them, and they have nice music, and I'm going to just ask you to switch to these eggs. And weirdly, people will come in a week later, a month later, just making that change,
right,
and report major differences in their health. Again, seems inconceivable, but there's data. You know, collect your own data, see how you feel. So I would say, you know, that lifestyle assessment is a huge, important first step in with what we both do. But before I'm going to take them down that, you know, bunny hole of depression and assume, okay, this is a depression that, you know, might not go away unless we do medicine, I'm going to really look at how many other changes can we make in your life to just improve your lifestyle, your quality of life. If those symptoms of depression are still there, then my next step will actually be look at herbs, supplements, other kinds of ways to help the body improve its function. And if that doesn't work, then I'm going to work with our physician to see how little medication can we give to get the result we're looking for.
Right.
Not get them to the therapeutic threshold, which is usually like 10 times the amount they need, but it's okay. You know, there's a place for that. But so, you know, I'm definitely a much more kind of progressive, trying to layer everything so that I'm not treating something and diagnosing it as such until I've really ruled out everything.
Right. That makes a lot of sense, because it almost sounds like, you know, I asked you a question about treatment and application, and basically you walked it back to before you can even get there.
Yeah.
So if someone is listening or watching, it's really the first step is making sure whoever you go to see is actually taking a holistic approach and asking you questions and really trying to diagnose you. Like if you walk into an office and say, I just feel unmotivated, sometimes I feel sad, feel like there's no point, I'm feeling this, and they go, well, hey, here's some Prozac.
Yep.
Right? Like, I mean, like, that's probably like, that's probably not the right, you know, and that may be the answer for some people and it may be what works for them, but at least honor that person and their well-being to get through that process of finding out all those other things and eliminate some of the things that, hey, it could be your diet. It could be you lead a sedentary lifestyle, right? You need some more exercise, all that kind of stuff. And wow, like, we just change those things and we don't have to put chemicals in our body. Mm-hmm. But there's also, I think, the element of someone's self-worth and how they see themselves.
Oh, yeah.
And if they buy into the fact that I have depression, I have anxiety, and I don't want to put a stigma that those are bad things, but they can shape how they view themselves and their abilities and capabilities. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
yeah,
I mean, exactly. In the big picture, the big goal for, I think, everyone in your positions is to have somebody have a great quality of life.
Right.
Yes, absolutely. Definitely.
And there isn't a study out there that supports medication only doing better than medication plus therapy. Like, those studies don't exist. What we found is you wouldn't ever just hand somebody Prozac and have them go away, because it won't work.
Help. I mean, like, it doesn't fix the root cause of the problem.
But if they are in therapy and happen to take that Prozac, you can get really exponentially better results.
Right.
So it goes back to, you know, how the impact of connection. Even you think of just touch, which in psychotherapy, you know, the APA got into this huge, you know, frantic, like, oh my God, nobody can touch anybody. Mm-hmm. And okay, the physical connection is only one thing, but it's ridiculous to be able to have somebody who's in, like, I see chronic pain patients and lots of combat veterans, and for them to realize that that if they give agreement, that just putting a hand on their hand or a hand on their shoulder, or offering, we always do the verbal offer first, offering a hug at the end of the session, amazing, amazing impact in their ability to connect human to human, soul to soul. You know, and that can be, this number of patients that I see that live alone and don't have any physical contact with anyone.
Right.
Of course they're depressed.
Yeah,
sure.
That's not right.
Who doesn't like physical contact, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a crazy system we have now, because everyone's such a germaphobe. Everyone puts on gloves before you walk into the room as a patient, and they think they're going to catch something if you're coughing or sneezing, and you're just another normal human being that you would see on, like, a bus or a train. But they treat you like you are some kind of thing that needs to be quarantined, need to wear gloves and a hat and a mask, and that makes the patient feel so alone and just, you know, exiled, and okay, I guess I'm sick and no one wants to touch me. And I feel it's so sad when I see that, and I go in, I see older patients, and I'm just like putting my arm on their shoulder, like, hey, how are you today? How was your day? And they're like, no one asked me. And I'm just like, I'm so sorry. How can that be better? Like, what were you watching on TV? Like, what do you have planned today? What are you getting? Are you getting any procedures done? Just starting a conversation as well, showing that you're there for them, not just like, hey, this is medication A, this is B, this is C, you're gonna take this for that, there we go, bye. And I see people do that in the healthcare industry,
right.
And they just
six-minute system.
Yeah, six-minute system. Right. Okay, scan you, scan the med, bye, gone. And the whole thing about, you know, Zoloft, Prozac, all these like SSRIs, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors,
right.
What they're actually doing is going into your body, seeing the serotonin, which kind of makes you happy, right? And keeping them in your bloodstream, not making them get absorbed. So there's more of it around and you feel a better mood. But what happens is people who have depression and anxiety, they have already a decreased production of serotonin. But the medicine doesn't make you make more serotonin. It just tries to keep the ones you have out longer. That's why over time people need increased doses, because you get tolerant to the drug and you need a higher dose to keep them out more. But they're not actually fixing the cause of why do you have a lower serotonin level.
Right.
And people get into this long, you know, prescription over years and years and just increasing, but not really knowing what caused them to be depressed in the first place. And it's always, it takes about like 30 days to 60 days to really fully help you. And one of the biggest risks is suicide. Mm-hmm. When someone first gets on SSRIs, they initially don't feel good and they don't have the energy to suicide. And then once they get the energy, they're still having the bad thoughts just because they have more energy. And then they get an actionable plan to actually do the suicide. And that is the saddest part, because there's no really education on it. Most people are like, here's a pill, you're gonna feel better in 30 days, see you in 30 days. But what if they don't make that appointment because they're busy with something else, they have kids, they need to pick them up from school.
Right.
And now they're still having those bad thoughts. And now they have energy to then purchase a gun or take their own life in another manner. And that is the scary part. And that's why I think awareness and education is so important, because most people don't know that. They just think, this is a magic pill, I'm going to take it, I'll feel better.
And they have an incredible level of trust. That's whether it's, you know, right or wrong with their physician too, right? Like if I'm a layperson and I'm not a medical doctor, and then I go in and I take my son or my daughter in, and you know, kind of same logic, right, with kids who have a hard time focusing in school, right? And you go in there and they go, oh, give them these three pills, you know, like you trust what your physician's telling you, right? So if you're not educated, if you're not informed and have never been around someone who takes a holistic approach and goes through that like actual process of diagnosing them and ruling out all kinds of stuff before we go straight to prescription drugs, you know, you could see how people would be like, okay, my doctor told me to do that. I mean, there's
definitely, you know,
there's
my husband's like that.
Trust there.
He's like, this doctor, this nurse practitioner, PA told me this, and he comes home with me. I'm like, what?
Right.
What did they tell you? And then he's like, I'm just gonna listen because they told me I have to do this. And I was like, well, actually, you don't. You have a choice. And I think it's about reminding people they have a choice. It's their prerogative on, because it's your body, it's your health, it's who you have to see in the mirror every morning, and you live with all the consequences of the actions you do. Not the physician or the NP or whatever provider you use, not me, not Sage, not you, Josh. It's them, and you need to really empower them and say, I always tell people, we think it might be this, let's see what we can do about it, and if it's not, let's get together and see what else it can possibly be to get you on the right track. Because a lot of times doctors, you fit a checklist and then they go, okay, you have this, and they have to bill and all this insurance stuff. And it really limits them. It's not that anyone's a bad provider, but it's just how the system works, that it's so segmented and that they need to do it in 10 minutes and then you're off on your way. But it's just about letting people know the education, giving them the power to choose, I think is the most important part.
I think where that conversation comes up a lot for all of us clinicians is for people who are diagnosed with cancer. And it's really interesting what many doctors, the approach that many doctors take is they say, okay, we're gonna do this surgery, then we're gonna follow up with radiation chemotherapy, and this is what you're gonna do. And the patient literally says, okay, and walks out, and they get home and they say to their family members, so I'm having surgery this day, and then I have to start the chemotherapy, and that's gonna be for 9 months. And there's this, and you can tell, like they're not grounded, they weren't any part of the decision, they just followed this recommendation. And not that the recommendation is right, wrong, or indifferent, but being able to sit with a patient and say, well, what do you want to do? You know, what makes sense to you? what's your intuition tell you? And they might say, you know, I definitely think it's smart to take out that cancerous organ. Let's get that surgery done. Then the question is, do you feel like the chemotherapy is a good idea for you? Is that something you can buy into? Because, and I know that's probably a terrible term, but if you can get buy-in, if you have a belief that something is going to work or not work, you're going to alter the course of how your body embraces that as a solution.
I completely agree. Yeah, I was going to say, it almost creates, if you go that route, it almost creates a binary win-loss outcome, right? So it's like, okay, we did the surgery. Is it gone? And if it's yes, you won. And if it's no, it's like, whoom, right? And then it's, okay, radiation, chemotherapy, is it gone, right? Whereas if you're saying, hey, you know what? Like, we probably do want to do surgery. Let's think about chemo and radiation. But like today, what you can do is eliminate XYZ from your diet. Okay, I want you to, you have an exercise, right? So like a walk a day, more organic leafy greens, stuff like that. Then like every day is a win, right? Yeah. Because a week later, they've lost excess. If they're obese, they've lost a bunch of excess weight, right? It's like win. Right? Okay, their moods are more stable. They're getting more sleep. Like, win. And you're kind of like, now you're like upbeat. You're feeling good. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I firmly believe in that. Like, I think that's, but if you create this black and white win-loss scenario, well, it's just really dangerous.
Even things like, you know, we've got to look at the language we use on ourselves, you know? Bucket list? Really? I'm going to kick the bucket?
Yeah, kick the bucket, yeah.
No, I got a wish list, man. And my wishes come true, you know?
Yeah.
You know, even terminology. I heard a colleague say, I'm building a war chest. And I said, great. I'm building a hope chest, by the way. Mine's building faster than yours is. You know, I mean, all of that makes a difference. And even the word holistic, I would actually just encourage the word comprehensive. Because people freak out with the word holistic.
Yes,
they think you mean something woo-woo, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they think you're going to throw crystals
like,
and
we want a comprehensive mind, body, spirit, you know, plus approach to things. So it's interesting that we live in a world where people are still sort of not really tuning into some pretty important little changes that can be made that are so easy and can drastically change quality of life.
Yeah. So for our company, I mean, we do have a kind of an office setting, right? Not kind of, that's what we have. Because we do have some salespeople that are mobile and out there in a sales force, and their job's a little bit different. But the majority of our employees and the people that I work with are sitting at a desk, and we get them stand-up desks when they ask for them. And when they say, hey, that'd be nice, you know, we offer them, which has been kind of cool because they'll stand up for part of the day and they'll sit down. But like, the ailments that maybe I would imagine a lot of people have that work in that type of setting, what would be your advice, you know, whether it's nutrition or lifestyle or any of that kind of stuff, herbs, teas, I mean, you know, for people out there that are in that type of work environment, do you have any advice for those people?
Yeah, I would say the first thing is start your morning getting some natural light. That kind of syncs your circadian rhythm. I know everyone, you know, wakes up, they go on their phone, it's not natural light, or they're like, oh, I wake up too early. But make sure you go out in the morning when there is natural light, even on your commute, or you get here and then it gets light, go out for like a 10-minute walk. That way your circadian rhythm syncs like, oh, I'm awake. This is time to get the blood flow going and start thinking and be more focused. That really helps. And also drinking a hot beverage first thing in the morning, like a hot tea with lemon and ginger, just to kind of revitalize your body, because all your organs slows down, like peristalsis slows down while you're sleeping, and everything just slows down because you're resting. And when you wake up in the morning drinking a hot beverage, you cause this vasoconstriction where your blood vessels are like, and it's like, oh, we gotta get going, we're gonna wake up now. And they're gonna start, you know, working their way and being actually awake inside and actually awake outside, to kind of mesh the two rhythms. And throughout the day, if they are sedentary, they can always do NEAT, which is non-exercise activity thermogenesis, which is anything that's not exercise, sleep, or working. So you can walk around, you can do some lunges around the office. So just, I would say walking is the easiest thing to do, especially if you can get outside and get that light. to get our body in sync in the proper way. And eating a healthy breakfast, I would say just one goal, just a healthy breakfast, or breakfast smoothie is what I usually do because I know we're usually on the go. Right. Just to start your day right. And then once you start your day right, it makes such a difference for the rest of your day and how it goes. You won't be, if you have a nutrient dense breakfast or a smoothie, you won't be craving that Snicker bar or that Twix bar or those Doritos at all. You would just feel calm. And once people start feeling that, they are amazed that they're like, oh, I'm not starving by 10 a.m. That's weird. But they don't even notice that until it's like 1 p.m. and they're like texting me like, hey, Poe, I'm not hungry yet. It's amazing right. what I ate this morning and what I did. Mm-hmm. So it's just small little things that you can action very easily. The tea, yeah. the walk, the natural light, and getting out there.
The light's interesting because mm-hmm. I didn't expect that because I know the the negative effects of, you know, screen time right before bed, you know, that you should take mm-hmm. a half hour to an hour of like, mm-hmm. you know, where you're not looking at a TV or phone or anything like that because it helps you sleep better. But I didn't think the other way. So that's kind of how you end the day. But then it's also important to start the day with some light, which is makes perfect sense, right? Because we're we're animals yes. with thousands of years of DNA, right? And it wasn't that long ago that we were like hunter-gatherers mm-hmm. and like that's how our day started, right? It was yep. like, here's light. Okay, I get up and now yes. I need to be active, right?
Yeah,
and
it's all really of a sudden, back to biology.
The animals are stirring and the woolly mammoths are coming. Exactly. Get up now.
Right. So, I mean, it makes perfect sense. And yet, like, we've created this society where we've kind of sheltered ourselves and without light and all those things. And we have, you know, these things. And it's really a funky time.
Yeah, I would take it a step further. I have been working with a series of corporations to actually implement those ideas. because it's one thing to give a person a recommendation. And you might say, you know, I really like that recommendation that Poe gave me. I'm going to start doing that. And you mm-hmm. might even get one or two of your colleagues going like, he's going out. Let's go. Yeah, I want to do that too. But if you have a corporation that is really on board, the lights go off 3 times a day. The lights go off. That means get up from your desk, go downstairs, walk wow. out the door, walk yeah. around the building, and then you can come back in. And whoever gets around the building first and back up, the lights go back on. Fine. You just got your whole team right. out to get fresh air, actual sunlight, and sunlight comes through, even if it's cloudy, you know, like yeah. just the exposure to something other than recirculated air and, you know, light that not all of us can manage. And I have lamps because I had a brain injury. I can't deal with fluorescent lights for very long. It doesn't make me feel good. I go outside, I feel like so much better. Right. You know, mm-hmm. so doing things like that to implement. Going from, I worked with a lot of law firms, and they had to really shift gears for what they would put in their break room. So they, yeah. you know, they just learned to go away from donuts and pastries and into not just fresh fruit, but fresh vegetables. Mm-hmm. Like this was right. like, what do you mean fresh? Nobody wants yeah. vegetables at 10 in the morning. I'm like, you know what? Maybe they do. I crave mm-hmm. kale. Like right. if I go into a smoothie place, I'll say, can I have number 2, but can you take out anything that would make that sweet and add kale? And they look at me and they're like,
what?
Really?
This is a juice shop. We love sugar.
Yeah, that sounds great. But that's what right. my body needs, you know? So yeah. doing some things actually as a corporation to implement getting that, you know, more sunlight and enforcing it.
Right.
You know, creating, I just got asked to do a midday meditation and they're starting slow. So once a week, we have a Zoom call that is available to every employee. I'm there and I lead them through a guided imagery and a meditation practice for a half hour. It's amazing.
Right.
Like it's amazing for me and it's really amazing because about 80% of the staff actually jump on and do it because the corporation has said your health is more important than right. us getting 30 more minutes of you answering those emails.
Right.
Because yeah. then when they come back, they're like, God, I feel great. You know, I'm ready to go again. You know, right. what am I going
to
do?
And even if they don't fully buy into the meditation, just the fact that they're stopping what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
They're not
yeah.
you know, typing on the keyboard or sitting down at a desk or stressing out or, you know what I mean? Just the fact that they stop to take a breath.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's, you know, there are so many. And, you know, yes, we rely on our cell phones. But, okay, if we're going to rely on our cell phones, let's go to, you know, our favorite meditation apps, because you can throw your earbuds in and walk with it in your hand. And even if all it is four square breathing, you know, great, then you're doing that and you're actually calming and feeding your body with, you know, great oxygen. So there's so many things that we can do. But I think that where the real big difference is actually in corporations implementing some of those little tweaks that allow the employees not just to have an idea, but to actually have the permission to use the idea.
Right. How about supplements? You know, there's a lot of like advice that people get for what they should take, and, you know, natural, you know, unnatural medicine, all that kind of stuff. But like specifically for a lot of maybe vitamins and minerals and things like that, that you don't get out of your normal diet. Are there some that you guys think are kind of like, someone's listening or watching, the like top three, top five? You know, I know every person's different, so that's kind of a dangerous thing to say. Yeah, everyone, here's your, but, you know, in your experience, are there certain things that maybe people aren't getting that they should, that they could take that'll really help them?
Yeah, I definitely always suggest people to take a multivitamin and from a reputable brand, such as like Now Foods. They're actually NSF approved, so Olympians can use them. So don't just go on Amazon and type in multivitamin for men and then just buy the cheapest one or the first one or the one with most reviews. Actually make sure they're actually going through the channels of approval of nutraceuticals. And so I say a multivitamin because we live busy lives. We don't always eat nutrient-dense foods three meals out of the day. And that's a good baseline, I think, to start with to get that minimum requirement.
Right.
And then also SBO, soil-based organism probiotic, where they incorporate these organisms from the soil that is around the world. And they really help your gut grow good and bad bacteria. So we need a balance. It's not just getting a probiotic. A lot of people eat yogurt. They're like, oh, it has probiotics in it. I was like, oh, your yogurt has dairy, has loads of sugar, mostly dairy and sugar. And then a little bit of maybe one or two cultures. But get one that's a wide spectrum. And that will just help your gut balance. You need kind of like an 85% of good, 15% of bad. That way your good soldiers that are fighting for you in your gut are like constantly like, okay, there's bad out there. I'm like training in case one of them replicates too much, I know how to fight them off and balance back, right? So that would be the baseline. And then the other ones would just be really dependent on what the current issues or problems someone is facing. If it's sleep or stress, I always say adaptogens are good because they help regulate your cortisol levels. If your cortisol levels are too high, they can help you bring them down. If they're too low, they can bring them up if you need it. That's a good one to incorporate. A lot of them, people can use them as like superfood powders, but just make sure it's a reputable brand, I would say. And for sleep, sometimes people use magnesium or glycine to help them. It really depends on what they've tried already in order to dial like what we should try next, basically, for supplement wise.
Yeah, I think I would just bounce off of that. I'm a firm believer in vitamins and minerals, and the companies that I use generally split them. So a vitamin supplement and a mineral supplement. So vitamins you're taking in the morning, minerals you're taking at night. And, you know, minerals are going to help you sleep, like magnesium. So I kind of look at that recommendation rather than taking something that actually incorporates all of them at once. And sometimes actually there are certain things you can't take with other things, but they're still in that one a day. I didn't say that out loud. You know, not to say that's a bad brand, but it's not the one I choose. And I would say for the folks who show up, and I love your comment about, you know, fighting cortisol, but also the, you know, allowing the body to find its own resources to not only train well, but also fight well. And then I would say there are a lot of women who show up with symptoms of depression who are low in omegas and low in D3. Those are just they show up a lot. And so I will tell people, you know, next time you're at the OBGYN, just simple blood test, get your D3 checked, because it's so simple to restore. And there's really no downside. If you're low on that, you take some, you actually feel better. And it is associated with actually decreasing symptoms of depression. I love emu oil, and I'm not just a fan, I'm definitely a consumer. And so I don't do well with fish oil, but I can take emu oil, and it's a great source of omegas, and it also tends to decrease depression symptoms. So, you know, again, is it symptoms of depression, or is it just poor nutrients or low in nutrient? Yeah, hard for me to tell. All I can say is those symptoms that we associate with depression tend to get better when those things are in balance. The other thing I'd say, just to, you know, not overstate, but sleep is really, like, it's really important, and it's an important topic to have people truly look at their sleep. You know, if it takes a Fitbit, get the Fitbit. If it takes a sleep study, do the sleep study. Because if you don't have restorative sleep, chronic long-term sleep deprivation is deadly, really deadly. And you know, I know this from my own experience. I had twins prematurely. They didn't sleep for a year. I did not have restorative sleep for a year. And I ended up on the floor of the shower thinking about ways to kill myself. I had a gun from living in Chicago. And I was absolutely that close to killing myself. If I had been able to think of a plan that wouldn't have inconvenienced anyone. And, you know, as a trauma psychologist for almost 30 years, I didn't want to traumatize even a chambermaid who came in to clean up the hotel room, you know, where I'd killed myself.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what made a difference? I didn't go on medication. My family, I talked to my family, finally. I was very hesitant to do so because I didn't even realize what was going on with me. I just realized I wanted to die. They hired a night nanny who came once a week. And for once a week, she said, I am going to lock your door. I don't want you coming out of that room unless you've had 8 hours of sleep. And in a month's time, my life was so different, I could hardly conceptualize how different. I'd never wanted to die. But long-term chronic sleep deprivation so drastically alters your judgment.
Right.
And now think about all of these cases we have of moms with postpartum depression.
When it could have just been sleep deprivation, right?
A lot of them. It's just sleep deprivation. Okay, guess what? The answer for this is resource. You know, even if you don't have the money to hire somebody to come in, guess what? You have family, you have friends. You have, you know, a worldwide sistership of people who will show up, and if they're trustworthy, you know, they will sit and stay with your child while you actually get some sleep. And while once a week is really not a perfect solution, very quickly my friends actually learned what was happening. And I had a beautiful friend who came in, and she was another once a week where she'd say, I mean it. Don't even get out, you know, don't even walk out of here for any of the other kids in the house. Like, I will take care of that. And so twice a week, I started to get more and more sleep, and I restored pretty quickly. It was probably 3 months before I really felt like myself again. But it's a crazy, crazy, crazy impact that non-restorative sleep can have on a body. And so when you talked about your colleague who killed himself, you know, I was a clinician. I was working at the time.
Right.
A mental health care clinician. And it wasn't because my life was bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wasn't getting enough nutrients, and I wasn't sleeping.
Yeah.
And my judgment was altered drastically. I am so, so thankful that, you know, people around me finally noticed enough to say, like, we got to do something here. Because I wouldn't even have noticed it.
Right.
So not to kind of, you know, be a mic dropper, but it really, if we reach one mom with infant out there who says, that's interesting, I have been feeling pretty bad and the doctor wants me to stop nursing and take this SSRI. I wonder if maybe I could change my diet. I mean, I wonder if maybe even just a neighbor could come and, you know, take the 12 to 6 a.m. shift, you know. There's an idea.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think when I think of Joe, who's the, you know, the guy I worked with here and a friend of mine, that everyone says, like, it doesn't make sense. Right. So something was there, and whether it was sleep deprivation or something like that, but, you know, whether it was some kind of substance or whatever, and I have no idea, I'm not trying to throw it, but like, whatever it was, you know what I mean? A life issue or something like that. But it's like, you know, if someone finds themselves just low enough in that moment of time, and like, you know, like you're saying, if sleep deprivation kicked in and this kicked in and that kicked in, and you just find yourself there, it only takes like a few seconds, and, you know.
Yeah, an impulsive decision becomes a permanent solution.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that's great advice. What, so I'm very interested in the, you know, plant-based versus, you know, meats and dairy and all that, because I'd love to hear what you guys think on that. About 3 months ago, I changed to a plant-based diet. I'll still have fish on occasion or seafood. I don't eat dairy. I definitely started feeling better and noticed it pretty quick. And I've been doing reading and, you know, watching YouTube videos and TED Talks and all that kind of stuff and podcasts. And kind of what I've taken away from it is it's really about quality of the food, right? Like you were saying about the meats, right? So a lot of the studies out there, they're looking at the normal American diet where it's like a Big Mac and a quarter pounder and you know what I mean, as opposed
no
to
grass fed,
right,
no regenerative farming,
but in terms of like meat or like a carnivorous diet, an omnivorous diet, like where you're mixing in some meats like that, or dairy in particular, I'd just love to hear what you think about that and the impact that has on just wellness in general, but also, you know, mental health and all that stuff.
I definitely think gluten and dairy are very bad for us because it definitely increases our inflammation. And inflammation is kind of the root of most diseases that we end up getting, autoimmune diseases, chronic diseases like lupus, Crohn's, IBS, colitis, and even depression and anxiety can all be led from that. In terms of meat versus plants, I really leave it up to my client. I'm not going to say you can only eat plants because I only eat plants or I only eat meat, so you must be a paleo. It's really personal. And when we start to restrict things for our clients, they're going to feel stressed, and we don't want that. We're trying to relieve stress from their life. So I leave it up to them and what their personal values are, because some people are animal advocates and they don't want to harm an animal. And that is amazing. You know, I wish I could do that. But my body, I actually was vegan for a year and I could not get the balance for myself. My body did not respond well. I was losing my hair. My nails were very brittle. I was anemic. And I love animals and I really wanted to be this animal advocate. And I stressed myself about it because I'm like, I feel so guilty. I'm a terrible person. I can't not eat animals. And then I realized, you know what? My body's just the way it is. And I can't really change my personal DNA and biology. So what I do is I eat meat like once or twice a week instead. And when I do grass-fed. I try to do regenerative farming where the animals are raised with a great amount of land. They graze on that land. They defecate on that land. That feces gets back in the soil. So the roots of those plants go deeper, grab more nutrients out of the soil. They eat that grass. They feel better. They're healthier cows. And it just goes in a full circle. It's like an ecosystem. So when I do suggest, it is really about the quality. And even eggs make a huge difference. And it's just crazy how like little actionable things can make a huge difference in our lives. So it's really based on someone's preference. And I'm not going to make them change their moral code or their values. But I work with that. And what my system is just making sure they get their nruments like fat, fiber, cruciferous vegetables, and protein. And you can get that from either a plant-based or a more meat-heavy-based diet, and it all works. It's just don't eat, like we all need our fats like omega-3, 6, and 9, but there's also oxidized versions of them, like sunflower oil, canola oil. Those are bad fats. But fats in general, they're good because our brains are mostly fat. They're like 60% fat. So if we're not eating fat, we're kind of like a deprivation in our brain. And they're going to be like, what's going on? Our brain's not, it's going to be more atrophied. So it's definitely a personal decision. And whatever it is, I can respect it. And I can help them find those nutrients in the foods that they like, is what it's really all about. So yeah.
I love how you, the way you approach it is it's almost like baby steps in a way, right? Because if you give them the win and they start feeling better, like if you literally just said, hey, what do you say we try to take dairy out just for a couple of days, or, you know, and if they felt worse, then you say, okay, well, maybe then it's not for you, right? But, or let's sub those eggs for these eggs. And then just wait a little bit, and they go, wow, I feel a little better. And it's like, well, why don't we try this or try that, right? You're not trying to get them to do it overnight. It's almost similar to like an exercise regimen, right? You take someone who's been a couch potato or in an office all day, and then you're like, okay, we're going to run this. Right? They're going to go out one time. They're going to like blow out their knee, and they're going to be like barely able to like sit down and stand up, and they're going to be like, this is terrible. I'll never do it again, right?
Yes.
So I think that's a very responsible approach.
I work part-time, kind of gently part-time, as an intrinsic health coach for Zach Bush at the M Clinic. And there is not probably a stronger proponent for plant-based diet. But even Zach and I have had a lot of discussions about, you know, how do you, if you have somebody who's been paleo and you say, okay, well, it's time to go plant-based now. I mean, as an intrinsic health coach, they'd fire me. You know, they would be like, that's really great that you want to go with the company motto, but, you know, I've always got to just listen to where are my clients coming from, what's their goal, and what works for their body. Like for you, you know, being vegan in that way, in the way that you did it, didn't work for you. Mm-hmm. I did 10 years vegan, and in the beginning it didn't work for me because I was doing it wrong. You know, I wasn't educated or trained enough about what to eat and how to eat and when to eat and all that good stuff. And I wasn't even going towards quality. Like I just didn't know anything. Now I would say I eat mostly a plant-based diet, but I make a good pescatarian. Mm-hmm. But I don't just crave like any kind of fish. Very weird, like sashimi, like very specific kinds of, I think I'm going for a nutrient. Really what I'm craving is a nutrient that I'm getting there. It might even be the oil in the fish for all I know, you know. So I could probably tap it down and figure out, oh, it's that. Well, I'll just take that instead. Except I actually like sashimi, so I like eating it. I think it's fun. Yeah.
I can totally relate to that. That's why I started eating fish, because I was about a month in, and I felt like there was an emptiness. Mm-hmm. There was something that I was like, I'm just not feeling fulfilled, right? And it wasn't like, I don't think it was calories. I don't think it was like I felt like I was out of energy, but there was just this like, I never felt full. I never felt kind of... So that's
which
that's
is not
why
a bad
started,
thing.
Right.
If we are used to that feeling,
right.
Like
that becomes our norm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Even I mean, I can't count the number of weight management clients that I've worked with, and the going for full or over full is really the norm, rather than go until you're not hungry anymore. So we look at, you know, food that can easily be sort of closed up in a container. So, you know, they sit down to eat and you say, okay, well, I just want you to stop eating when you're not hungry. When those signals, you know, the hunger pangs are gone, I want you to stop eating and just put the container away. You can pull it back out and start eating again. When you get those hunger signals again, pull it back out, go back to eating. Stop eating when you're not hearing that signal anymore. Just to train that is an amazing, amazing piece of progress. But eating not to full, but eating to like fine, you know, it's a, or eating nutrients because they cause you to feel full, if that's your norm. Like you said, it's what you'll try to match.
Right.
Honestly, on a plant-based diet, I would feel full all the time if I just 8 and 8 and 8 and 8
I'd that's be like fiber.
400 yeah. pounds probably. You know, like, I mean, yeah. you can you could definitely overdo on a plant-based diet. So, you know, it is possible to find those things, but you have to search. You have to try. You have to experiment. And
yeah,
you know, so I definitely lean on quality. I know for our company, we also encourage people. There's a product that we like, Ion Biome, and it does search for those ingredients that are far below the top of the surface into soil that is hundreds of years old, because we don't produce soil even yeah. anymore.
I know.
We're missing these ingredients, right? So you just see somebody taking that single ingredient that we refer to it as dirty water. It kind of tastes like that. What a day. You just, you know, you're taking a little bit of this, and suddenly people are saying, like, wow, this is weird. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not getting those leaky gut symptoms anymore. Like, oh, mm-hmm. You know, our tight junctions are something we have to actually take care of. And if we could get rid of glyphosate, that probably would be our number one healing factor in the United States. That would be, you know, take out Roundup Weed Killer, and you'd have a lot fewer sick people. But even those of us who would consider ourselves well notice these GI issues. And if you get rid of that, we may or may not be gluten intolerant, you know, I mean, because so much of that is mixed up with glyphosate. But, you know, yeah, if we're taking out sort of gluten and maybe cow's milk,
yes.
you know, then and we use farms that are actually taking care of their animals yeah. and their plants and are having, like, those farmers are having quality of life, not the farmers in the middle of our country who are killing themselves because they're being forced to, you know, waste out their crops, or they're not, I mean, that's no way to live. But right. when we can support farmers doing it differently and living the life that they desire, like, they're out there on the range for a reason. If they could actually really enjoy that, their quality of life goes up. Everything improves. Everything.
Right. Yeah, you mentioned cow's milk. I love milk, but I don't drink it anymore. My wife is, like, I guess you'd call it pescatarian mm-hmm. too, but she crushes almond milk and all that stuff, and I can't do it. Like, so I can't, funny. It just doesn't taste the same. I just can't get there. I've tried all of them. I've tried, like, the coconut, the, like, you know, I guess it's soy, it's silk or whatever that mm-hmm, stuff. Mm-hmm, and the almond. Right. I think the almond's probably the closest I can do. If I really crave cereal or something mm-hmm. like that, then I'll have that. But
yeah, milk is a weird thing. Or you can try to get maybe non-pasteurized sheep's milk or goat's milk. Yeah. That's at least better for you. I did transition my husband to nut milks now, and he loves it. He was a very big, like, cereal eater every morning, mm-hmm. must eat processed wheat. And he's like, this is great for you. It has an American Heart Association label on it. I'm like, yes, but that's not true. It doesn't have much fiber, loads of sugar. He's like, what do you mean? And now he's, like, totally transformed. It is an acquired taste.
Yeah.
Or you can try to make it yourself at home. If you have just a blender and some water, you can make a lot of nut milks like that.
Yeah.
Just
Vitamix
it.
Go, yeah.
Yeah, Vitamix is, like, my solution for everything.
Yeah, my wife's all about it.
Do you know, I think probably cereal is probably the one place that alternative or nut milks can really work, because if the cereal is something,
yeah.
the mm-hmm. flavor of the cereal is right. something you like, there is probably some substance you can add in that won't be offensive to you.
Right.
But it is interesting to see our children move away from drinking milk. And couple of my kids were lactose intolerant, so that kind of went away very early on. But what did they replace with? And I've trained children who drink water. They drink water, they drink mm-hmm. fizzy water.
Yeah.
If I buy yes. a soda, like a Hansen's or something like that, and it's in there, they're like, oh my God, it's a soda. Can I have that now? You know? Like, it's exciting. But even juice, they're not a huge yeah. juice drinker, so they drink water.
We don't need juice. It's yeah. not a dietary yeah. requirement to drink yeah. loads of sugar in acellular form and right. spike our blood sugar level.
Yes, yeah.
And my mom's way was so funny. She would take orange juice, but she never told me what she did. She would fill, like, less than a third of orange juice in a cup and then all water.
And she would give it to me. My wife does that trick with that kid, my kids all
the
time.
Yeah, and it works. God,
you're so sneaky.
Because I grew up drinking. I was like, orange juice is not that great. Like, it has
grape or apple and that stuff. It's so sweet. Like, you can actually get away with it and it still tastes
really sweet.
Pretty normal, you know.
So I remember the first time I ever had normal orange juice, I was at school, I was like, what is this? Why is this so sweet? Like, what is this flavor? And I went home and my mom's like, oh yeah, in America, everything's very sweet. We watered it down. Yeah. And I was like, oh, and I actually don't really drink juices ever. Unless I make it myself, because there's really no use. It's not going to really help us with anything. And it's not even hydrating. So,
yeah.
I really use it.
So, more curious questions from me before we kind of finish up, because I hear stuff back and forth on it. So, coffee? Thumbs up, thumbs down, depends on the person.
It depends. So,
how much they probably drink is probably a big part of that. Like,
so, a moderate amount of coffee, like caffeine, is like 95 milligrams. But if you go to a coffee shop like Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts, any of those, they probably have three times as much in one cup.
Got it.
And that's just really intense stimulant you're having. I actually, you know, people don't need caffeine. It's a drug. You know, you see people line up to get their fix in the morning in the coffee shops. It is an addiction. And if you constantly rely on this stimulant to be focused, you're not really fixing your core issue of why you're not focused. There might be other hidden issues that we need to fix.
Got it.
I can use coffee as like, it's funny, some clients, I was like, if you love the taste of coffee and, or do you just love that it gives you like a kick, a high? Because there's other things that can give you a kick. You know, if you're actually sleeping and then you don't need like eight cups of coffee in one day. I can actually use coffee, about like 45 milligrams of caffeine, kind of coffee, like low dose, as like a pre-workout. Some people have used that and they get a kick and they work out and they feel good. But once we start diving in into why they even need the coffee, is it an oral fixation issue? Because you can replace an oral fixation with anything else that tastes good, like a nut milk, or I can make like frappuccino smoothies that taste really good, that has all the nutrients you need and tastes just like a cappuccino, if that is the root of the issue. Or is it just the energy level that they need? And it's funny because I see my husband used to drink like five cups of coffee a day and now he drinks zero. And it was a mental thing for him. And it was, and I never really drank coffee, and working in the hospital setting, everyone, you know, drinks coffee. They all have a cup.
Yeah,
and it's almost
that's
like,
how it is around here, I think, for the most part.
But it almost
I'm like
feels
a four
like,
to five a day guy.
It feels like a camaraderie, because I also felt like, oh no, I don't want to miss out on like the conversations they're going to have when they go to the coffee shop. So I'll go and I'll get a tea. And they're like, oh, you got a tea? That's weird. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I like tea, but I just really want to be part of this group. So there's multiple reasons why people use caffeine. So we just have to dive in on why. If it is an issue for them, we can dial down and fix the other issues. Or a tasting, replace it. So it just depends. In moderation, it's fine.
Yeah.
If they really want it.
Yeah, I think that they're, like, from a more personal or practical stance, I'd say, you know, probably the, as you said, the less stimulant that we're putting in, the better. I mean,
right,
probably better for our bodies to function based on, you know, its,
sure,
its own
sense.
Power or steam. And practically speaking, there are going to be people who are, who have conditions that aren't coming along fast enough, or they're just noticing that, you know, they want that kick, or it's just a habit. I know for me personally, it was really interesting. I'm apparently really good at pouring coffee and not good at drinking coffee. So I could pour four cups of coffee a day, but I might get eight sips out of that. Like, I'm, and I didn't realize that for a long time. And so, you know, I thought, oh, okay, well, I'll have to really look at, like, what I'm actually drinking.
Yeah.
The other thing I did at home, which could easily be done in the workplace, is that I went, I titrated. I went from, you know, a full octane to like three quarters to half and half. And now I could probably do, you know, a quarter of the coffee grounds are, you know, full strength and the rest are decaf. Now, decaf has a certain amount of caffeine in it, but that impact on my body is far different than, as you say, going to one of the coffee houses that I went to, I don't mind saying this, but I went to Phil's, and I'd never had coffee from there before. And it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I was going to meet a prospective client, and I just ordered a coffee, you know, and I think, I don't remember what it's called, cold press or whatever. So I'm drinking this coffee and I'm noticing like my hands start to shake, and then I get this cold sweat going, and I'm thinking, what is wrong with me? It kind of scared me a little. Mm-hmm. And then I had a friend who always was at Phil's. He'd been talking about Phil's, and it was the first time I'd seen it. And I was like, oh, I gotta go there. And I called him and I said, talk to me about this coffee. Like, because I would only go like to Starbucks or whatever. And he goes, oh, you had that reaction. He goes, yeah, it's pretty strong coffee there. I'm like, oh. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I don't have any criticism or objection about these different places, but for somebody who apparently was not really drinking a lot of coffee and drinking like low octane coffee, I felt like I was almost having like a heart attack. Mm-hmm. So I think that we just have to kind of look at what works for us, and if we are craving a little bit of energy, can we go take a walk?
Right.
Even a good, like a healthy juice or smoothie, like does that, you know, give us a little bit of a lift? And if we are going to rely on something, could we get less caffeinated lift?
Right.
You know, like right. What is that critical threshold that we could actually get a bump without getting, you know, the cold sweat going on?
Right. Well, and all of your, from both of you, your tips and advice kind of all come back to, you know, I'll use the word comprehensive, but yes. Approach, right?
A win.
Because, you know, if you're getting your light in the morning and, you know what I mean, you're getting some exercise and you have a good breakfast and you're not like going on these insulin spikes and all these kinds of things, you know what I mean? Then, you know, after lunch, if you had a healthy lunch instead of some garbage lunch, then you're not going to have that afternoon drop where you're like, I got to have a cup of coffee. I got to have a cup of coffee, right? If you're getting your sleep, or if you value your sleep, you're probably not going to crush a cup of coffee at 10 p.m.
Right.
So it's like when you're looking at the whole thing, sleep, light, diet, all that stuff, exercising, you're doing all that. It's almost tough to go in this direction with everything else and then all of a sudden go, but you know what? I'm going to have 10 cups of coffee.
Yeah. You won't
it's
need
almost
it.
Like it just doesn't match up. So it makes sense. And the last thing I wanted to ask about was people always say like red wine, you know what I mean? Alcohol in general and those kinds of things. Like what is your take on that, you know, for people?
I would say, I mean, some people like alcohol, but I would say in moderation. I mean, it's very quick to be a binge drinker. If you have like more than 5 drinks in one day, how big are these drinks and easily become a binge drinker? And you're hurting your liver. People get fatty liver cirrhosis. And your liver is what detoxes your whole body. So if you're having excessive amounts of alcohol, you're hurting your liver, you're hurting your detox center, and everything else will go wrong in this large sequela of reactions. So I would say if you do have alcohol, make sure you have it in moderation. Don't overdrink. And I also think a lot of my clients who do suffer from alcohol and like binge drinking, there is another underlying issue of why they engage in such behaviors. Because
sure.
Someone who is happy and healthy and well, they don't need to drink 10 shots of tequila necessarily
right.
every single night to be happy, right? Because they're getting hangovers and dehydration and not getting enough B vitamins. So I think alcohol in moderation is fine, social settings. It's only when it becomes a problem in your daily function of life that it's an issue.
Right.
So I'm not going to say don't drink alcohol if, you know, you are from an Italian family and you guys love wine, you have like the best wine ever at family gatherings. It's so limiting. I would just say, what is your situation? How much do you drink? How do you feel when you drink? What do you do the next day when you drink? And tailor it from there, because everyone can take different amounts of alcohol and different types as well.
Yeah.
So I would say a small to moderate amount is fine, as long as they're functioning and they feel well overall.
Right.
Yeah. I would add, I'm a wine drinker and I like different kinds of wine. And red versus white, I actually always thought that red was better in terms of like sugar content. Actually, red is higher in the sugar content than white.
Interesting.
So like that was a weird one to learn. But a couple of notes on just wine drinking. Look at the country it's from. We still spray most of our fields and most of our crops here with weed killer. So going organic, if you're going to, you know, use California wine, make sure it's organic, or choose wine from another country. A lot of the other countries, and I do a little research to see are they spraying or not, but if you can choose a country where they're not spraying, you'll notice actually a difference. If all you do is drink wine from a different country and you notice less of a negative effect, even GI effect from drinking wine. I think the other thing that's wonderful is there are vintners who are producing now a much lower sugar content in the wine, and it's so much better for you. I mean, the amount of sugar that's actually in wine is really pretty high.
Right.
And so if you can look at test driving wines that are lower in sugar, like that's going to be better for your body as well, and produce less of a negative impact. So that's just some practical things that, you know, I could just repeat, you know, everything in moderation and what works best for your body. But, you know, if you are going to choose something, I would look at, you know, don't add the other kinds of, you know, negative effects as well. Like, don't add the glyphosate, don't add the sugar, you know, like, try to correct for those problems as much as you can.
Yeah. Well, and I think that that mind-body connection, too, anytime it's in excess, right, whether it's coffee and it spikes you up, or alcohol and the depressive, you know, effects of that, whether it's the next day or whatever, like anytime you're sending your body into this weird, you know, taking it out of its rhythm, right? Like it's going to compensate one way or the other. And those that it could compensate with physical ailments or mental health problems and depression and things like that. So I think that's good advice.
I wanted to follow up on just a couple things you said. One, it just made me think of that I don't know where your listeners will come from or where they'll go to, but the whole nature of light, getting light in the morning, there are lots of states and countries that are low light a lot of the year or have excess light in some portions of the year. For people who are in low light centers or who are in states where, you know, you hear funny commentary about Washington being, oh my God, it's always raining. Like, okay. Well, they also have light boxes that you can use on a regimented dosing, so 20 minutes twice a day. And they have them in every shape and size, and they're, you know, desktop. You stick up, sit there, eat your breakfast for 20 minutes, get your light. So if you are in an area where there isn't good natural light, or you really literally, if you're working in a hospital inside, in the interior of the hospital all day, and you're not getting any natural light, you can actually get a light box that will produce as close to natural light as possible, and that can improve your mood. It's one of those integrative medical solutions for people who live in areas where there's lower light, or to reduce seasonal affective disorder during times of the year where there's lower light.
Right.
So just a note.
That's good advice.
About people listening in other areas, you know, who might say, well, yeah, but there's no, you know, it's raining all the time here.
Right.
And then the other thing I just wanted to comment on is we've talked a lot about the proactive and preventative measures and not quite as much about the treatment. And I would say, you know, almost all treatment for mood disorders comes from starting with a connection. And whether it's with a nurse or a doctor or a therapist or a layperson or a priest or it doesn't matter. It's really where can you make that connection with one other human on the planet. And honestly, even if it's in a chat room or a group forum, or it doesn't really matter, if you start somewhere and make a connection, things get better quickly.
Right.
And, you know, if that can be in a therapist environment, whatever that is, I do some portion of my work outside and some inside. But if you can also then work with somebody who's trained to listen to you and look at you and watch and really comprehensively evaluate what's happening with you over time, you know, I think it can go a long way to making sure that you're getting the kind of treatment that you need. And that actually helps you break through whatever it is you're struggling with.
Sure. Makes a lot of sense. Well, thanks so much for being here today. I really appreciate both of you taking out the time to come in here and share your knowledge and experience. And I think we're in a lot of ways just scratching the surface when it comes to taking this comprehensive approach, when it comes to just recognizing and respecting the importance of good nutrition and how that affects our mental health and just our wellness and enjoyment of life, you know, in general. So I think getting this type of information out there is huge. And I'm hearing it more and more. And so I really appreciate you guys being here to share and add to that kind of collective education that's out there. So,
well, thanks for the invitation. Thank it was you. Wonderful yeah. to meet you as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Yeah. I'm glad we have this platform to share.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure your patients are very happy to work with you and they're lucky to have you. So
thank you so much.
Thanks for being here.
Awesome.
All right, that's it.